Hello and welcome to the 2020 VPR Vermont PBS debate series. Ahead of Vermont's August 11th state primary, we're bringing you debates with the candidates for Vermont's top two offices. Last week, we heard from the Republican and Democratic candidates for lieutenant governor. This week, we'll hear from the gubernatorial candidates. You'll be able to hear from the Republicans tomorrow. Today, we are joined by the Democrats. I'm Jane Lindholm. Joining me via Zoom are Ralph Carcajou-Corbo, David Zuckerman, Patrick Winburn, and Rebecca Holcomb. Thanks to all four of you for being here. And to give you a sense of what this hour is going to be like, here's the format for the debate. In the first section, I will ask the candidates a question. They'll each have 45 seconds to respond. In the second section of the debate, candidates will have an opportunity to ask questions directly of one another. And in the third section, we will pose questions that have been submitted by listeners and viewers. If we have time, we'll throw in a few lightning round questions with very brief responses. And at the end, each candidate will have 1 minute to offer a closing statement. So let's dive right into it. You each have 45 seconds to respond to these questions. We're going to start today by talking a little bit about campaign strategy, because the way a candidate campaigns is designed to send a message to voters about who they are and how they'll be in a leadership position. David Zuckerman is in his second term as Vermont's lieutenant governor, a progressive Democrat. He previously served in the Vermont Senate and the Vermont House. He and his wife run an organic farm in Hinesburg. David, you recently held a drive-in concert and speaking event at a farm in Williston. You've talked to people waiting in line at the farmers market in Burlington, since you can't socialize in the normal way in that setting this year. And you have another outdoor in-person event coming up near Lake Elmore soon. You're one of the few candidates who's actually holding campaign events with large-ish in-person gatherings, albeit in a masked-up, socially distant way. Why is that in-person group gathering interaction important to the message you're trying to convey or the approach you're taking to winning the primary?
Well, thank you, Jane, and thank you, PBS and VPR, for hosting this debate. And, you know, in general, folks in Vermont are used to very personal campaigns, whether we're at the fairs, whether we're at the parades, whether we're in church basements and so forth. And it's really been a very different campaign this year, almost all virtual. My campaign was the first campaign to stop having in-person events. But we decided once things were understood better that with very strong safety protocols, we could open up and go to places where folks were with open settings, social distancing, proper spacing, masks, and so forth, to really have that ability to look people in the eye, to talk about the issues that they're facing, whether it's their economic challenges, both before and now during the crisis, whether it's the climate crisis, which is an ongoing major issue, or anything else to that effect. Thank you.
Rebecca Holcomb was appointed Vermont Secretary of Education by then-Governor Peter Shumlin in September of 2013 and served also for the first 15 months of Governor Scott's tenure until stepping down in early 2018. Before that, she was a teacher and a principal and held several other roles in education. Rebecca, you've also done some outdoor meet and greets in the past few weeks, but I want to talk about your fundraising strategy. I'm on your campaign mailing list, and in the last 2 weeks alone, I've received 12 emails from your campaign. One was about policy. Almost all the rest were about raising money. They all had a sense of urgency, sort of a, we need your help to get back on track kind of message. And I'm wondering what message you are trying to convey to supporters about your campaign.
So I first want to go back to the question that was asked earlier, and then I'll answer that question. And, you know, I figure we have an exposure budget with respect to COVID-19. We're asking our schools to open up in just 5 weeks. And right now, we know that if we want our children to be back in school, we need to be doing everything we can, particularly as statewide candidates, to make sure that we're not the ones spreading the virus. And that's why we've been very cautious about our public events. With respect to campaign strategy, we were at the end of a filing period. We're working hard. I'm not a first-time candidate, so I don't have 20 years of building networks and lists to make the difference. But what I am doing is working to reach people by phone, reach people through the Zoom events that we've been doing, and have that kind of face-to-face conversation as best we can in the middle of a pandemic.
Patrick Winburn is a personal injury lawyer from Bennington who describes himself as a progressive Democrat. He's served as past president of the Vermont Trial Lawyers Association and has never run for statewide office before this race. Pat, you've spent a significant amount of your self-funded campaign money on short TV and social media ads where you play up your regular guy credentials, featuring your dog Alfie in a message because, as you put it, he's so cute, talking about your wife's experience feeling ostracized because she was a kid who got free lunch in school, or quoting Bob Dylan's The Times They Are a Changin' and saying Vermont has already changed. but you offer little in the way of specifics about what you stand for or what you'd actually put in place policy-wise in these ads. I imagine name recognition is a pretty steep hill to climb in a race like this and made very much more challenging by the circumstances of the pandemic. So what is the way you're presenting yourself in these ads designed to convey to Vermont voters that you hope they pick up on?
Well, like my dog says, Alfie says, people should be the people their dogs think they are. And I think that that's a spirit that's, you know, that Vermonters understand, and one that, you know, people realize that people in Vermont are nice. People want decency in government. They're tired of Trump. They're tired of all the shenanigans and all of the, you know, press conferences and crazy statements that Donald Trump makes. And I think that, you know, having a more personal touch and just being me allows people to see that, you know, who people are and connect with them that way. I do represent the little guy. I've been an attorney for nearly four decades. I represent the powerless against the powerful. And I do think that I have an understanding of what the average person feels, because I think I am an average person.
And moving on to Ralph Carcaccio-Corbo. Ralph is a Democrat from Wallingford. He's also running for U.S. House against Democratic incumbent Peter Welch. Ralph, it's actually hard to find anything about your candidacy online or in the media. You don't have ads running or events that are publicized where people can find out more about you. Some people may know you if they remember the news about someone interrupting the governor's inaugural address in 2019 by throwing play money off the press balcony. You were escorted out by Capitol Police and arrested, but as I understand it, no charges were filed. What is the message that you would like to get out about your campaign, and how are you doing it?
Well, basically, this campaign was something that I embarked on out of necessary reluctance to bring some issues to the forefront that generally get ignored. I've been close to these issues from being out in the streets so much with activism, going all the way back to the days of Bush World in the early 2000s. And in the recent decade here in many venues like Burlington and Brattleboro and Rutland. So I believe, like I said, what I can add to the whole thing is a conversation of sometimes inconvenient truths that are, in a normal campaign, usually are left off the table. Other than that, I'm not in any way ambitious for office.
Let's go to a second question here. As we enter the beginning of the next gubernatorial term, the state economy is still going to be reeling. Vermont's fall and winter tourism seasons are unlikely to be running at full capacity. We don't yet know how many of Vermont's jobs will be able to return between now and the start of the session, but the current unemployment rate is above 9%. And many restaurants, retail establishments, even childcare centers are unlikely to survive the extended downturn and restrictions. Add the pressures of school budgets and the possibility that some families will be homeschooling, potentially reducing the headcount in local schools, and we're dealing with an ongoing economic crisis. You may not know yet exactly the scenario you'll be facing, but what would your approach be to dealing with the economy as you step into the job of governor? Rebecca Holcomb?
Thank you for mentioning this. We know we're looking at least a $550 million shortfall, probably more. We know we need federal assistance, and we're certainly hoping that we have a change of leadership that can help us get through this. There are a number of things I do. First of all, we need to invest in Vermont and Vermonters. It's critically important to use the purchasing power of government to keep money circulating, whether it's farm to school, when we do food distribution, running it through some of our businesses to do it. But we also need to be doing other things as well. We need to prioritize to make sure that we're keeping people safe and in their homes, and working to transition them to places where there will be jobs. And we also need to be making sure that we're making every dollar do double duty. It's why, for example, I've suggested that we support partnerships between child cares and schools to bring down the cost of child care at their overhead by over 30%, perhaps, in some communities, so that we can get back on our feet.
Patrick Winburn, what about for you?
Well, I think it is going to be difficult. And but I think my approach would be sort of the same approach that Franklin Roosevelt took during the New Deal. We need a lot of programs. We don't need austerity budgeting. And we need to give the people of Vermont a new deal. We need to invest in infrastructure. And we need to bring about the change that will put Vermont on a strong economic footing.
Ralph Corbeau, how about for you? What would your approach be to dealing with the economy and so much uncertainty as you step into the job of governor?
Well, we're on our own as far as that goes. When you've got seven at the federal level, no money to possibly come really of any significance to come down when we got a $741 billion wasteful defense budget, we're going to have to do the difficult thing like Governor Richard Snelling did back in 1990 when he instituted a progressive income tax, and they raised the rate on the top 5% of the wealthiest Vermonters, and were able to overcome the downturn that they were in from the 1987 recession at that time. So those were almost as difficult times back then, and Governor Snelling did the hard thing. And the legislature realized that that was the only alternative, and they went ahead and did it. They didn't play politics with it. They knew what needed to be done, and they did it. And this is what the type of thing would have to be done at the state level right now under these conditions.
David Zuckerman, your approach?
Well, first of all, we have to look at what's going on right now. I would like to see the governor using his Republican connections with Mitch McConnell, Trump, or others in Washington to make sure they get the HEROES Act passed to help fill some of these state coffers that are hurting because of the current economy. Without that, we will be seriously in the hole in January. As governor, I'll be working with the new administration, the Biden administration, to get that kind of support for Vermont. But also, we need to use the dollars we have, both a temporary marginal tax increase, as was just spoken about, to fill coffers so that working people don't get thrown to the curb. We need to push to make sure they extend the unemployment benefit supports that are coming from the federal level. We need to use every dollar really efficiently, like the Everybody Eats program, where the state provides money to restaurants to pay their employees, buy local food to make 18,000 meals a week for Vermonters. Each dollar has to be multiplied in the economy.
In our third question, I'm going to talk about racism, as I did with the lieutenant governor candidates. The conversations and calls for action on racism and ending systemic inequality have grown louder. In Vermont, people of color are at significantly higher risk for contracting COVID-19. Vermont has one of the highest rates of incarceration for African Americans in the country. And Black Vermonters own their homes at half the rate of the national average for Black Americans. What policies would you put in place that could make real change when it comes to racial disparities in Vermont? Pat Winburn?
I am committed to appointing a person of color to my cabinet. And not only that, but I think that there should be screening committees that include people of color to give me some guidance as to the types of people and the quality of the people that would be in my first administration. I believe that we need citizen oversight committees, and we also need to appoint school resource officers and social workers in the school systems of Vermont so that people will understand the significance of Martin Luther King and the problems and the plight of people of color in our state.
Ralph Corbeau, how about for you?
The economic side, I guess there would have to be some study on that with, qualified advisors. But I would say right now, one of the concrete things that can be done right away is what bills that are in the legislature right now that are related to this, like H-496 and H-808 could be passed. And we also need to ban the use of devices of torture like tasers and tear gas, which can cause lifelong disabilities and even death in many cases. So as far as immediate remedies, those are some of the ones. On the economic side, again, I'd have to have a study of that.
And Rebecca Holcomb.
I would use some of the same policies that I use as Secretary of Education. First of all, we can't fix what we can't see. So we need to use systematic data collection across all aspects of state government, everywhere we touch people, to make sure that truly we are sharing opportunity in an equitable way. I would also do implicit bias training for staff at the agency of all the agencies, just as we did at the Agency of Education. I'd evaluate every single policy proposal that came to me through the eyes of equity to make sure that it would be truly sharing opportunity and not reinforcing the inequities we already have. I would make sure state government looked more like the people we serve, because people need to see themselves in leadership. And I'd involve the voices of people in our historically marginalized communities in the decisions that affect them, because that's what we need to do to make sure everybody in this great state has a fair chance.
David Zuckerman, what about for you, ending racial disparities in Vermont?
First of all, thank you, Jane. We have to recognize that racism and white supremacy are part of a multi-generational systemic issue, that has affected all of our economy and all of our citizens in disproportionate ways, as you mentioned, with housing and wealth accumulation. We need to include learning our full history, both in education and as adults, to really understand our internal biases. We need to augment the Office of Social Equity so that there's more than one person trying to work across the whole state to find equity. We need to recognize that we are on unceded indigenous lands, so we again know that history and reset how we're looking at the lens through which we're going to operate. We need to include far more people at the table from the very beginning, as I've done for 20 years on numerous policies, to make sure voices are represented at the beginning of the conversation, not just at the end.
Well, this concludes round one of our VPR Vermont PBS debate among the candidates for governor, the Democratic candidates for governor, hoping to win your vote in the primary. We're talking with Rekha Holcomb, David Zuckerman, Ralph Corbo, and Pat Winburn. And when we come back, the candidates will have an opportunity to ask questions of one another on their policies and positions. This is the VPR Vermont PBS debate with the Democratic candidates for governor. I'm Jane Lindholm, and today we're hearing from Patrick Winburn, David Zuckerman, Rekha Holcomb, and Ralph Corbo. In round two of our debate, the candidates will have a chance to ask questions of one another. Candidates will each get two rounds. Please make your questions actual questions and keep them short. We'll start with Ralph Corbo. Ralph, who's your question for?
I'll ask this one of Ms. Holcomb. If you're elected governor, will you hear the cries of your people here in Burlington, the cries of the people in Winooski, the cries of the people in South Burlington, the cries of the people in Essex, who have been placed under a condition here that is driving them to anxiety and distress, to devalue property values, and environmental degradation in the skies from the F-35s. What, if anything, would you do in response to their cries of having this placed on them against their will?
Ralph, thank you for the question. I assume you're talking about the F-35s, which I heard, unfortunately, today for the first time through our Zoom call in a break here. And I know how disruptive this is now, and I grew up actually in Afghanistan hearing the F-16s leave and go bombing in the countryside in Afghanistan every morning. And what I just heard is louder than that. What I will do is work with the communities, work with our federal delegation, and work with people around the state to make sure we're doing everything we can to mitigate the disruption that it causes on learning and on the life and well-being of people in those communities, to make sure that they aren't disrupted any more than they absolutely have to be. I'm sorry that you had to show that to me this morning.
Ralph, do you have a follow-up for Rekha Holcomb?
In terms of that same question?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything specific, especially that you were involved in education, where the all the scientific reports show that this is going to lead to child cognitive problems and even hearing problems? Is there anything specific you can offer to that specific facet of it right now?
Well, I think we need to have clear evaluation of what the sound impacts are, and we need to look at how we can mitigate the sound impacts on young people to avoid damage to hearing. And, you know, I think this is a federal issue as well, and there should be federal support to make sure that we are working to make sure that whether it's mitigation, whether it's changing flight patterns, whether it's planning differently, whether it's soundproofing buildings and houses, that people aren't exposed any more than they need to be, but certainly aren't exposed to things that do harm.
David Zuckerman, who's your first question for?
My first question is for Pat Winburn. One of the messages and images associated with your campaign and in your ads is the reshuffling of a deck of cards. I think you mentioned it earlier. But just like our society, a deck has kings and queens, as well as twos and threes. Could you expand on what you mean by reshuffle the deck? How will you make sure that the reshuffling will be equitable and address longstanding injustices within our system?
I would make sure that it was equitable by looking at all the cards face up. The cards were dealt out in the 20th century jokers and probably some kings and queens, and then have a deliberative process so that we can discuss good ideas that are actually already been brought up in the legislature and vetoed by Phil Scott, and then would turn the cards back over and deal out the deck for a new deal, a new deal for the 21st century.
A follow-up, David Zuckerman?
Well, it seems if we're talking about economic injustice, there's really only one king and one queen and one jack, and half the state is 2s, 3s, 4s, and 5s. What will you truly do? What policies will start to shift so that the deck is more equitable?
Pat?
There are no kings and queens in America. We got rid of the kings and the queens in 1776. And you know, there are economic royalists, and there are big corporations, and they in America or in Vermont.
Rebecca Holcomb, who's your first question for?
David, I'd like to ask you a question that's come up again, and I know it's coming up again because I've been hearing about it from people around the state. Now more than ever, we know how important it is that people be confident in science and in public health experts who are tasked with keeping us safe around the state. In your years in the legislature, you did cast doubt and fed fears about the safety of long-proven vaccines, including the measles vaccines, that have saved hundreds of lives in the United States and around the world. Since the beginning of this campaign, you failed to clarify your record. Instead, you've claimed that vaccines should be free and accessible, which they already are because we are a universal vaccine state. Are you ready to take responsibility for the fact that your history on this issue actually undermines the public health of Vermonters?
Thank you, Rebecca. First, I want to just make sure people know how exciting it is that the recent news out of England with progress on a vaccine for coronavirus is now moving into phase 3 trials. And I know we all are looking forward to when those are available and will listen to the scientists as to who should get them and when. And I fully support the scientists in that work. I also want to thank you for allowing me to clarify this question due to the misrepresentation of my position, which you've been perpetrating now for months, even though I've been very clear in many debates with respect to this issue. I've not been unclear. I support vaccines and I will follow medical professionals' advice on making COVID-19 vaccine mandatory. And in a specific instance that you've been bringing up, I was one of a third of the Senate that voted against the last minute amendment for philosophical exemption removal. And then we all voted for the bill to remove the philosophical exemption. So I want to clarify that I voted for removing the philosophical exemption, even though in your representation, you've distorted my views. I certainly hope that after clearing this up over many debates, including this one, that you'll not continue to misrepresent my views in debates, TV ads, or social media. That
Would you
generates
like to ask a follow-up, fear. Rebecca Holcomb?
David, I was there as Secretary of Education in 2015. I heard what you said. It's on BPR. It's in 7 days. It's clear, you know, and I think the big challenge we have, and I heard this again the other day, was when people are talking about giving hydroxychloroquine to every child, when people are questioning whether vaccines are safe, what we really need to do is work to make sure people feel safe and will take the vaccine. How will you counter the implication that you have already given that these vaccines aren't safe, as represented in the amendment to the bill that you proposed, which really applied an untenable standard that went against the advice of public health experts?
Well, I have voted, as I said, for removing the philosophical exemption. I've stated unequivocally many times my support for the science of vaccine, the science around climate change. My dad was a doctor, my mom was a nurse. I have a lot of science in my background as a chemistry minor, and I use it on the farm every day. We will follow the scientists and the medical experts with respect to vaccines. You can continue to distort one statement from 20 years of public service where I've earned the trust of Vermonters to stand up for what Vermonters need, from science to economic well-being, from sustainable agriculture to the climate crisis. And, you know, I'm going to leave it at that because my record stands for itself. I introduced a bill to mandate a vaccine in 2006 and 2007. So I think if people really look at the whole picture, it's quite clear.
We're going to move on just so we can stay with time, but you'll have a chance to ask a second round question. And if you choose to, you can go at the same topic and same candidate. So Pat Winburn, your first question.
I'd like to ask Rebecca who her largest campaign donors are, and if she has any problem taking, just receive the money from.
just to reiterate, because your line is a little patchy, Pat, it sounds like Pat's asking Rebecca Holcomb who your largest campaign donors are and if you're comfortable with them. Rebecca?
I have a couple of members of my family and friends who have given me their most significant donations. They've maxed out. I'm comfortable with that, particularly when we know that the Republican Governors Association is already heavily funding Governor Phil Scott's campaign. Their chair is Governor Abbott of Texas. I don't know if that has anything to do with why Governor Scott has been lukewarm at best on voting in the context of a pandemic and is why he's refusing to mandate masks. I don't have any problem asking for support. And unlike you, Pat, I'm not self-funding my entire campaign. And we know it takes money, particularly as a new campaign candidate, to get up on TV and to make our case. So I'm perfectly fine with that. I just need to clarify one last issue. David, the bill that you sponsored was one of 108 people. You were not the lead sponsor. And it also had an exemption, a philosophical exemption in that bill.
David Zuckerman, do you care to take 10 seconds to respond?
Sure, I appreciate that. Included in those 108 sponsors, and I've never said I was the lead sponsor, so again, you're misrepresenting, included Harry Chen, who went on to be the Commissioner of Health, and some other legislators who are endorsers of yours. So I'm assuming if you're so upset about it, you'll disavow those endorsements. That was a bill introduced at the time in the context of the law. It was to add another vaccine to the list. It wasn't about changing the underlying law. That's how laws are made. And in this instance, when the option came up to vote to pass a bill to remove the philosophical exemption, I voted for the bill.
David Zuckerman, we're actually going to stick with you. You get your second round question to whomever you choose to direct it to.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. This is a question for Rebecca. It's also about campaign finance, but a different perspective on it. Racial and social justice issues have come to the forefront in our debates and discussions these days. Campaign finance and running for office is one of the most difficult areas for people to break through. Do you support the current campaign finance laws or public financing laws? And would you expand them in some way to help make it more equitable for people to be able to run?
I think we see nationwide, and David, I'm really glad you bring this up because this is an important issue. And running as a first-time candidate has shown me how much of a powerful incumbency bias we have and how powerful a role money does play in politics. And we do need campaign finance reform. We also need it at the federal level. I will make sure that as governor, if Bernie Sanders or Pat Leahy or somebody else gets pulled into an administration, I'll appoint a Democrat, not an independent who might caucus with the Republicans, to make sure that every single vote we take makes the difference that we need for Vermonters, but also for our nation across the state. We need reform. We need it at the federal level. We know that politics doesn't serve the interests of people right now.
David Zuckerman, a follow-up?
Well, I mean, you talk about how difficult it is, but you've raised far more money than either of the other any of the candidates in this race, so it hasn't been that hard for you. But with respect to public financing, it doesn't sound like you have an interest in expanding it to our state local offices, which is not a federal issue. We have it for governor and lieutenant governor in Vermont. Legislators, candidates have a really hard time, especially those of minority and women. So would you support public financing for those races and how would you pay for it?
Yes, David, I do. I do support it. And one of the reasons I got into the state a full year before you is I knew it would take me that long to be able to be at this point. I'm not a lifelong politician. I had to fight to be where I am. And I knew I had to start early or I wouldn't have a chance. And that's why I'm here now. And it's also why I do strongly support public financing for first-time candidates. We know that we will not be government of the people, by the people, and for the people until we make sure that all voices, including our historically marginalized voices, have a chance to run. I've been proud during my campaign to be able to lend the services of my campaign to help some first-time candidates figure out how to get started, how they get out to people, how they make those connections. And I'll continue to do that as governor because running a statewide race is an opportunity to lift up people from the bottom up, all the way down the ticket.
Rebecca Holcomb, you get another question for another candidate.
Pat, you've talked a lot about why it's important to have voices from outside Chittenden County be part of our political leadership. Would you be willing to elaborate on that?
I believe the question was, why have I been critical of Chittenden County and the power that they play in Montpelier, or words to that effect?
Rebecca, would you reiterate your question?
I had framed it positively, but it was, why do you think we need representation and leadership from outside Chittenden County?
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I know you're from the east coast of Vermont, and I'm from southern Vermont. We're sort of the the lost frontier down here. And I think that there is too much power in the hands of the politicians from Chittenden County and in Montpelier. And that's one of the reasons that I'm running is because I believe that I'm an outsider and I'm from Bennington. And I think that we need to have more respect from the rest of the state. And I think that that's true for the Northeast Kingdom and for the rural areas of Vermont. I think that Chittenden County just has too much power.
Rebecca, would you like to ask a follow-up of Pat Winburn?
Yes, Pat, can you give specific examples of one-size-fits-all policies or laws or places where we haven't championed the outer communities of Vermont that you think need to be addressed?
Well, I think the school system is one. I think that we haven't funded, received our fair share of funding of the school system. And you know, there's a feeling in Bennington County that the rest of the state, just dumps people in Bennington and who have a lot of problems, who are, hooked on drugs and how intentional the policy is or whether it's a full policy. But I think that we always end up seeming to be on the short end of the stick.
Pat Winburn, you get a question now for another candidate.
Okay. Well, I'd like to ask David Zuckerman. I know he's a proponent of legalization of marijuana, and I know he's a good farmer. If pot was legalized, would you grow pot? And if you did grow pot, do you think that's a conflict of interest in promoting that policy and still being governor?
Thank you, Pat. That's a great question. And when I introduced S95, when I first got into the Senate, to create a tax and regulate system. That was actually the first question that Peter Hirschfeld asked me from Vermont Public Radio. And I stated very clearly that I did not intend to do it, particularly if there was a limit on the number of licenses. And so far, most of the bills that are going through have limits on the number of licenses. And as a publicly elected official, I would not apply for any program in state government that has a limit on the number of licenses or folks that could get it. So no, I would not be growing that. There's far better growers out there, and I'm plenty busy as it is.
Pat Winburn, do you care to ask a follow-up of David Zuckerman?
No, I think that was a pretty direct answer.
Ralph Corbeau, you get to go last and ask another question of a fellow candidate.
I'll ask this one to Mr. Zuckerman. If you should be elected governor, would you, or do you have this philosophy that was expressed in, particularly in the famous book by Seymour Melman, The Demilitarized Society, of trying to start a trend of transitioning Vermont from a war economy, which we have a substantial number of manufacturers that are participating in making parts for war, into what's known as a peace economy by trying to coalesce with federal agencies to form something like technology reinvestment programs, where you team up commercial with military manufacturers so they can learn how to transition into making products for the commercial consumer market.
Well, thank you, Ralph. That's a full and complex question. I'll do my best in 45 seconds. Am I off mute? Good. I think as a state, our job is to build the economy we want here in Vermont. We need a much stronger rural economy. We need to invest in broadband. We need to invest in regenerative agriculture. We need to put people to work weatherizing people's homes and installing small-scale renewable energy like solar panels on working-class folks' homes and seniors' homes. And if there's technologies that have been developed in military or through NASA that can help us with better broadband, better energy efficiency, better renewable energy, we should definitely incorporate that into that process. And as governor, I would look for every opportunity to partner with any business in Vermont that can move us towards a renewable energy, solid economy for the future.
Pat Winburn, I know you're still there. Do you have a follow-up, Ralph Corbeau rather, do you have a follow-up question for David Zuckerman?
Well, then I think it is, if I understand right, then you're saying that war technology companies would still be welcomed here, and you wouldn't want a complete transition to a peace economy as was outlined in Melman's book, The Demilitarized Society.
Well, I haven't read the whole book. I haven't read any of the book, but I do know that we need to demilitarize some aspects of our society, including law enforcement, where we need to reprioritize funding for both economic development for economically deprived communities and communities of color that have been left behind by the couple hundred years of white supremacy. And we need to invest in those communities to make sure we build an economy so that folks are treated right in our society. We need to repatriate some of the money that's in law enforcement into mental health and other interdiction services. With respect to the military businesses that are here, they're funded by federal dollars and federal contracts. I would certainly work to move those companies towards using their opportunities and their strengths to be more in a regenerative and renewable economy than continuing to build aspects of war.
Well, that concludes the second segment of our debate with Democratic candidates for Governor Ralph Corbo, Pat Winburn, Rebecca Holcomb, and David Zuckerman. When we come back, the candidates will tackle questions posed by Vermonters. This is the VPR Vermont PBS Democratic Governors Debate. Welcome back to the VPR Vermont PBS debate among the Democratic candidates for governor. I'm Jane Lindholm, and today we're hearing from Rebecca Holcomb, Pat Winburn, Ralph Corbo, and David Zuckerman. Before the debate, we asked listeners and viewers what questions they would like you to answer. You're going to have 30 seconds to respond to these. Cheryl in Chester wants to talk about climate change and poses a question this way. What do you think the effect of COVID-19 has been on the climate crisis? And because of that, what are your ideas on restarting the economy with regard to the climate crisis? What are your plans for your office taking into consideration the urgency and need for drastic changes rather than gradual changes? Rebecca Holcomb, you get to go first.
I think COVID-19 showed us what we can do when we put our mind to it. And we know that COVID-19 is killing us in the present and making us sick in the present, but climate change is also doing the same thing. So it is urgent and we need to respond. I was thrilled that Joe Biden talked about a $2 trillion investment in a green energy transition. I see that as a fantastic opportunity to help Vermont develop energy independence and begin to build job opportunities that pay good living wages, that build on the work I did as Secretary of Education to help make sure that Vermont is more resilient, more stable, especially in the context of a very uncertain political and economic future.
Pat Winburn, how would you respond?
Well, I think that we know that unemployment will dry up at the end of the month, and there's been a short extension, but I don't believe that we can cut our way out of recession. We need investments. We need infrastructure investments. We need more workplace development. And, you know, the way we can help pay for that is by taxing pot, having a progressive income tax. The wealthy benefited in the good times. And I think that, they can pay their fair share during the hard times that we're undergoing now.
Ralph Corbo, how would you respond to Cheryl?
Well, I think to go back to something I mentioned before, for future health and to try to avoid these types of immune-based illnesses, we have to get the toxins out of our environment. We have to stop fostering military weaponry operation factories that have tremendously toxic byproducts. We have to think outside the box and think about turning the entire economy of the state into something of a green peace economy, maybe something on the order of becoming the organic garden breadbasket of the whole East Coast.
I'm going to stop you there because we're short on time for these just 30-second answers, which goes by, I know, very quickly. David Zuckerman, how about you? What would you say to Cheryl?
Thank you, Cheryl. Great question. I have been a leader on environmental issues and the climate crisis for 20 years in the legislature and been recognized for that, including this year with the endorsement of the Sierra Club. And what I would do is something I've been talking about for a couple of years now and as governor could finally implement, which is a Green Mountain New Deal. We would do a marginal tax rate, as was just discussed, on the top wealth earners in the country, in the state, and put that money towards immediate jobs in Vermont, weatherization of seniors and working class homes, building out broadband, which is good for our economy, good for education, and good for the climate, and doing small scale solar and renewable energy retrofits on working class and seniors' homes to save them money and tackle the climate crisis and put people to work.
Here's a question that came in from Jean in Winooski. Jean writes, never has it been so obvious that we need to divorce healthcare from employment. What is your plan for that and how will it be paid for? Pat Winburn?
Well, my plan is healthcare for all. I think that, healthcare is not just a human right, and it's our moral responsibility. Right now, it is connected to healthcare. In my mom and pop law office, I pay everyone's healthcare, and it's expensive for small business owners. But it should be for everybody. There shouldn't be any connection to your employment. And if people like their health insurance, they can keep their health insurance and pay for it. But I think everyone should have health care for all.
Ralph Corbo.
Yeah, I think when you think about it, the concept, they said they want to divorce the health care from the employer. I think they would definitely endorse that. I mean, you'd be taking this large expense off of their shoulders. And from what the studies I've seen, when you do that in the long run, what other types of things like maybe a slight payroll tax or something like that, that they might have to pay would in the long run wind up being a lot less if you give the responsibility of all that healthcare acquisition and maintenance to a government institution.
David Zuckerman.
Well, thank you, Jane. Yes, we have to move towards a Medicare for All plan, as I have supported for many, many years. I was talking to local businesses that have started a universal primary care system amongst their cohort with some others, and they're already seeing a return on investment by having their employees have primary care early on when they need it, so it actually saves costs in the long run. Not only will a universal healthcare system be beneficial for employers, it'll also be beneficial for employees and entrepreneurs who can now go out and start businesses without the fear of losing their healthcare. And finally, it'll also attract young people to move to this state to start businesses. Young families who are fearful of losing their healthcare could start businesses in Vermont.
And Rebecca Holcomb.
I absolutely agree. We need to move to universal healthcare. And this question underscores how important it is to elect a governor with strong executive experience who can get the job done. If Governor Scott had moved on payment reform, as was outlined in law in 2015, we would not be in a position now where our hospitals and our primary care providers were looking at going bankrupt because they weren't being paid to keep people healthy. I will lean in on payment reform to get it done, because that's the step we need to take to get to a place where we can afford universal care for all Vermonters. And I'll also begin to move us that way with a pilot, an RFP that cuts out the middleman and makes sure that we have good health care for all.
Joanne in Johnson posed a question that we asked the Democratic candidates for lieutenant governor, and we're going to pose it to you as well. Joanne says, for the entire 23 years I worked in the Vermont State Colleges system, Vermont was at the bottom or second from the bottom in state support. Because of the poor support from the state, the VSC tuition and fees for in-state students are highest in the U.S. for public four-year institutions. Our students are often forced to drop out because of the financial burden or else graduate with an overwhelming amount of debt. The system currently receives about 17% of its annual revenue from the state of Vermont. This is shameful, Joanne says. What is your plan to help the Vermont State College system survive now and in the future? Ralph Corbo.
Well, I'm afraid a lot of this is tied to what goes on at the federal level. You know, it's the unfortunate circumstances of the 21st century right now. The state does not get the kind of return on its tax dollars that it used to get in the days before the era of endless phony wars for endless military industrial corporation profits. The money is going at the federal level that could be coming back here into a $741 billion defense budget. And until we can break that, which I got to commend Senator Sanders and Representative Barbara Lee are trying to do along with others down there, I think this problem will remain until that can be solved.
David Zuckerman.
Thank you, Joanne. Great question and critically important. Anthony Polina has been fighting for this issue for a long time, and I'm glad to have his endorsement because he recognizes the effort I put into saving and strengthening our Vermont State Colleges. When the proposal was put forth to close the Northern Vermont University and Vermont Tech, I saw the biggest grassroots movement in Vermont in my 20 years of history. We know how important to that region it is for the economics and for young people who are looking for an opportunity to expand their education. We need to continue to invest, as the state legislature did with $30 million of bridge funding that the governor was not prepared to spend, to make sure we keep them open and expand their strengths and attract people from out of state where it's safer to be in Vermont to expand their intuition, their in out-of-state tuition to help fund them as well.
Rebecca Holcomb.
Two of our state's most important assets are environment and the ingenuity of our people. I'm going to invest in the ingenuity of the people by making sure that we have a state college system that works. We've made some mistakes, and anyone who claims to be surprised by where we are now with the state college system is being disingenuous, because this has been developing for years. The declines in enrollments that have been in our school systems for years are just beginning to hit the state college system. So we need to seize this opportunity to invest in Vermont institutions so they're here for our communities and for our students, but also to rethink how we do this in ways that make better use out of every dollar, so we can make sure that there is a place in the Northeast Kingdom, in every community in our state, where people can get access to the opportunity they need to get a good job that pays a good livable wage. And that's what I'll do as governor. We need someone with executive experience to do that.
And Pat Winburn.
Well, the states reduced the percentage of state funding for the Vermont State College funding system from 1980 down to about 17% today. This low percentage of state funding hurts the Vermont State College funding system's ability to keep tuition reasonable. It causes enormous debt for students, and it's difficult to adequately support the staff salaries and benefits. And I believe that we need to adequately maintain the facilities and purchase the needed equipment and have a better funding for our state college system.
This is a VPR Vermont PBS debate among the Democratic candidates for governor, and we have time for just one final wrap-up question in the debate. I'd like you to each spend a minute with a closing statement that talks about why you think Vermonters should choose you as governor. What will having you in that role give to Vermonters that none of your competitors can bring to the table? Pat Winburn?
Well, I think that my performance here today, as far as the connections, accentuates the fact that we need better broadband in Vermont. And, I think that we need to move into the 21st century in Vermont. I believe that we have been stuck in the past from a technical standpoint. I think we need more fairness so that our students can learn and so that our teachers can teach. And I believe that my nearly four decades of experience as a lawyer is a benefit. If there's a legal problem, then people hire a lawyer. And I'm willing to serve, and I'm anxious to serve as governor. I'm the past president of the Vermont Trial Lawyers Association, have been listed in Best Lawyers in America and those types of things. And I think that we need to be ready to roll on day one.
David Zuckerman, a final statement from you.
Well, thank you, Jane, PBS and VPR for this. I have been a fighter for over two decades on all the issues that have been talked about today, from economic injustice, universal health care, climate crisis, and others. And in fighting for those issues, I've not only been inside the State House working to push those issues, but organizing with Vermonters from all corners of the state for over 20 years. Being governor means knowing people in all corners of the state, bringing in their ideas, listening, and incorporating them into the process. And that's what I'm going to do as governor. And people know that track record for a long time of mine. That track record includes passing an increase to the minimum wage, passing GMO legislation, labeling first in the country with over 70% support across the state, work on affordable housing and expanding the opportunities for affordable living in Vermont, which we know is still a very large issue and of great concern. And I work to connect with Vermonters, as was mentioned earlier by one of the other answers, in terms of really organizing and bringing people into the process. Finally, as a farmer, small business owner, operator, I know what it means day to day to get things done and to build for the future. And we need to take care of today's challenges while building for a better climate rural economy in the future. Thank you very much for having me today.
Rebecca Holcomb.
Right now, when I talk to Vermonters, they're scared. They feel we have an economic crisis, a healthcare crisis, an environmental crisis, a social justice crisis, and frankly, a crisis of leadership at the federal level because they can't get the job done. I'm the only candidate in this race who has strong state-level executive experience, who can actually get the job done so that people have healthcare that they need, that we have strong schools in every community, to stop talking about childcare and actually fix it so people are paid well for the work they do and parents can go to work and feel safe and know that their children are cared for. We need not talk, we need solutions. And that's what I've been doing my whole life. And that's what I'll bring, because I know Vermonters need better. They feel that we're in a crisis right now, and Governor Scott has managed the crisis, but they know that being in a crisis is like running around your house in a rainstorm, shoving pots and pans under the holes in your roof and catching the water. We need a new roof. We need a new foundation. That means we need a governor who can get the job done so that Vermonters know that they're safe and can be planning for the bright future that our children deserve. Thank you.
Ralph Corbo, why should Vermonters choose you for governor?
Well, choosing me in not specifically, but I would hope what they would do is choose a candidate who would, in a sense, vote for them for their best interests, for the candidate who would have their best interests, someone who would realize that the U.S. military budget is more than the entire discretionary federal budget, including what's spent on education, affordable housing, and local economic development aid combined. And that this has to be changed if you're going to be an effective governor. You have to work not only here, but to change this at the federal level. So because this money should be invested in state and in our state and county communities in a green peace economy, supporting workers and their families, the basic needs of theirs, like healthcare, minimum wage increase, and paid child care and family leave. So I think we're in a historic moment right now with what's going down right now in Washington, D.C., and we should get our voices up and demand a significant Pentagon budget cut so we reallocate those funds to address the needs of Vermont communities that are facing the present ecological and societal issues that need serious revenue to correct.
Well, thanks to all four of you for being part of the debate today. That concludes our VPR Vermont PBS debate with the candidates vying for the Democratic nomination for governor, David Zuckerman, Rebecca Holcomb, Ralph Carcaccio-Corbo, and Patrick Winburn. Thanks to all four of you for being here and for dealing with technical difficulties today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jane.
You can listen to a replay of this debate in the Vermont Edition rebroadcast slot tonight at 7. You can watch it tonight on Vermont PBS at 8 p.m. Tomorrow, we will wrap up our joint primary debate coverage with the Republican gubernatorial candidates. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for joining us.